There has been an ongoing philosophical and theological argument about free will versus predestination. How do experiments on the human brain inform us on this question? That's the topic today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. How do experiments on the human brain inform us on the question of predestination versus free will? We're going to talk to our guest, Dr. Michael Ignor. He's a medical doctor, a professor at neurosurgery and pediatrics at State University of New York, Stony Brook. He's the director of pediatric neurosurgery. He's a senior fellow with the Bradley Center and a frequent contributor to Mind Matters News at the website mindmatters.ai. Welcome, Dr. Ignor.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
My father, when I was a lad, offered the following anecdote about free will versus predestination. And this is the way that I understood it for a long while. If you dig a post hole, are you creating a post hole of your own free will, or was the post hole already there and you're taking out the dirt? If you're creating the hole, you're exercising free will. If already there, the hole was predestined. So for many years, I actually thought that the idea, at least between free will and predestination, was something that couldn't be determined experimentally. But my mind has been changed, and we're going to be talking about that today with Dr. Ignor. Neuroscience sheds clarity on the problem. Dr. Ignor, you have educated me on the research of Ben Libet and how that informed us about humans' ability to have free will. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Ben Libet was a neuroscientist in California, I think at the University of San Francisco, for many years in the mid-20th century. And he didn't win the Nobel Prize, but I think he should have. He certainly is one of the most consequential neuroscientists of the 20th century. And Libet's fascination was with the relationship between thoughts and time. That is, he wanted to know what was happening inside the brain, timed as precisely as possible with activity of the brain. So at the moment you think something, what is the brain doing? And in fact, he wrote a book for the lay press called Mind Time. Was the name of the book.
Mind Time. Do you know if that's still in press at all?
Or? Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. It's actually a very nice book and a very nice synopsis of his research. And it's fairly technical. I mean, he goes into quite a bit of detail, but it's quite readable. And Libet, his most famous experiments, and he did many different kinds of experiments looking at brain waves and thoughts. His most famous experiment was on the question of free will. He asked a whole bunch of normal volunteers to sit at a desk, and he had a button in front of them that they could push, and he had a clock in front of them that they could look at the clock, and to within a few milliseconds, they could time like a thought that came into their head. The clock had a sweep second hand. It was actually, I think it was on an oscilloscope. And it had a sweep hand. And they could say that, you know, I had this thought at exactly this time, again, within a few milliseconds. And he also attached electrodes to their scalp so he could record the electrical activity in their brain. And he asked them, he said, just sit there at the desk and whenever you decide to push the button at the desk, look at the moment you decide to push the button on the clock and then push the button. And he would record their brain waves synchronized in time with the clock and with the button pushing. So he could kind of tell what's going on in the brain corresponding to their thought and to the pushing of the button. And what he found was that about half a second before they decided to push the button, there was a spike in the brainwave activity corresponding to that thought. And again, he found that it happened before the thought, before the decision. So he initially thought that that argued against free will. It almost seemed like the brain was generating the thought, and the person didn't really have any control over it. It was just the physiology of the brain that made the thought happen. So he said, well, it looks like that free will might not be real. It might just be driven by brain chemistry. But then, being a really good scientist, he decided to look at it in a little more depth. So he asked the people, when you make a decision to push the button, immediately veto the decision. So sit there at the desk, say, hey, I'm going to push this button, and then say, no, you know, maybe I won't push the button, and then don't push it. So he looked at the vetoes, and what he found was that when you made a decision to push the button, you still had the brainwave that preceded the decision by half a second. But when you decided to veto pushing the button, there was no new brainwave at all. It was silent in terms of brainwaves.
Interesting.
But you did make the decision to veto. So he said that it wasn't so much that you have free will, but you have free won't. That is, you have the ability to decide whether or not you're going to comply with what your brain is urging you to do. And that compliance is not material. It's not a brainwave. It's immaterial. And he said, that's the soul. That's free will. So he thought that he really had demonstrated scientifically that we have an immaterial power to override our material, you might say, temptations. And he said that this actually corresponds rather remarkably to the traditional religious understanding of temptation and original sin. He said that we have a constant bombardment from our material brain of impulses that are sort of encouraging us to do things. And he said that we have the free will to override that, and the free will is not from the brain. It's a spiritual thing. And it's remarkable research. It's very good research. I think it's pretty convincing evidence that free will is real.
This is fascinating. The first time I heard this from you, I thought, boy, does that make sense. Because the original sin aside, people get addicted to things. I used to be addicted to cigarettes. And I know I had an impulse in my brain that wanted to make me reach for a cigarette. And in order to quit cigarettes, I had to veto it. I had to exercise what you call free won't. I think anybody that overcomes an addiction, to be it to alcohol, to porn, to tobacco, whatever, has to exercise this free won't. So it certainly makes a lot of sense in terms of everyday application. And I think, let's see, when we were together last, I pointed to a verse in 2 Corinthians where we're told to take every thought captive. I thought, what a great description of this idea of free won't, that we have these impulses that come to us, that we're to take action from them and exercise our free won't and go against what those thoughts are telling us to do. I think there is a neuroplasticity effect from this free won't. Is there? Does the brain rewire itself in a sense? Could you elaborate on that? Because I think that's fascinating, the brain rewiring itself.
Sure. And I mean, there's been a fair amount of work done on that. Jeffrey Schwartz, who's a psychiatrist from California, has written and spoken about that quite a bit. And there does seem to be the capacity by exercising the immaterial will to ultimately change brain activity. And one could envision, and I think Dr. Schwartz has spoken of this with quite a bit of insight, one could envision a situation in which the preconscious impulses from the brain over time are altered by the immaterial will, so that you're not entirely a victim of your brain. You can override it and you can change it. The nice thing is that this is the traditional sort of religious understanding of human motivation, and there's a lot of scientific evidence that supports it.
I know, as somebody involved in artificial intelligence, is something called Hibbs' Law, which is summarized that neurons that fire together are wired together. And so if you think a thought a lot, then about A and B, then the neurons between A and B build up a stronger and stronger connection. That seems to be what happens with addiction. But Hibbs' Law, I think discovered in the mid-20th century or something, is something that people in artificial intelligence use, and I know is a fundamental aspect of neuroscience, but that seems to supply a theory, at least, to what happens to this rewiring of the brain during the neuroplasticity phase. and is really, really fascinating. You mentioned that sometimes Leibniz's experiment of free won't is actually misrepresented by materialists. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, the misrepresentation is very common. And it's almost routine to read or to hear Leibniz's work being described as scientific evidence for the absence of free will, which is bizarre because Leibniz himself explicitly endorsed the reality of free will, emphatically endorsed the reality of free will. And Leibniz pointed out that his research unequivocally supports the reality of libertarian free will. But the experiment very often, or his experiments very often, are described both in the scientific literature and in the popular press as supportive of materialism, which is something that they don't support and something that Leibniz himself made very clear that that was not his conclusion.
It seems that in order to do that, they would have to exclude the part of the free won't in the experiment.
Yes, and undoubtedly, in some situations, would be the result of ignorance on the part of the person making the claim. The person just may not know much about Leibniz's work, or may have no insight into the original research and have just heard about it and heard about it wrongly. And other times, I have to say that maybe the misrepresentation is deliberate because it doesn't support a materialist perspective.
So you think the ideology is actually trumping objectivity there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it goes on a lot.
Has Leibniz's experiment been reproduced and confirmed by different researchers?
Yes. Certainly the existence of the brainwave that occurs before a decision is made has been shown many times. And in fact, Leibniz wasn't the first one to show that. It was called the readiness potential, and it was shown a couple decades earlier by some German researchers. Leibniz was the first person to look at it in the kind of detail that he looked at it in, but it was known that there was a potential in the brain that happened before decisions were made by about half a second. Recently, functional MRI imaging has been used, which has shown perhaps even a longer interval between the brain activity and the decision, even a matter of several seconds before the decision is made, one can see activity in the brain. I don't believe anyone, though, has looked at the veto part of it, that is, that Leibniz's free won't aspect, I don't believe has been looked at again, because by and large, it's been denied or ignored.
That's interesting, because according to Leibniz, there was no brain activity during the free won't portion of the decision. Is that right?
Precisely. I mean, Leibniz interpreted the results of his experiment as strongly endorsing the reality of free will. And his experiments have largely been used to deny the reality of free will. It's a radical misrepresentation of what Leibniz actually found.
My goodness, that would be so interesting, because I think that no brain activity detected during the free won't would really be strong evidence about the immateriality of the mind. That would be really nice.
Right, and one can say, if one is really doing objective science, one can say, well, perhaps there was brain activity associated with the free won't, except that the way Leibniz was recording it didn't find it. And that's possible. Although he found the brain activity associated with the original thought, one would imagine that the veto would also show up. But none of those issues have been really looked at again carefully, which doesn't speak well for the integrity of neuroscience, because they should have been looked at again.
You think that that would be such a big deal, something that people would be really interested in, but maybe they're not interested in going down a path which leads them far from their ideology. So that's probably the problem. Very good. Well, Dr. Ignor, thank you very much. Our guest has been Dr. Michael Ignor. He's a professor of neurosurgery and pediatrics at State University of New York, and he's a senior fellow at Discovery's Bradley Center. We will have another talk with Dr. Ignor next time on What Makes You You. Until then, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.